I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 243 of Low Limit Football on this 20th of May, 2019, on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we're going to recap the drama on the final day of Bundesliga, a day that definitely did not disappoint. Chris Wondolowski became the all-time leading goal scorer in MLS history in style this weekend by scoring all four goals in a 4-1 win over the Chicago Fire over the weekend. Athletic Bilbao, Espanyol, and Getafe all played big matches on the final day in La Liga. Who won? Who lost? Who's going to the Champions League? Who's going to Europa? We're going to discuss that. Kylian Mbappe sends a cryptic message to PSG in a presser this week as the team enters the final day of the 2018-2019 season. We'll let you know what was said and what it could mean. And the Serie A enters a massive final day for Champions League, Europa League, and relegation spots. All massive coaching changes at the top of the charts as well. We're going to discuss that and much, much more with State of Play podcast host, Football Italia, and Gentleman Ultras, Matt Santangelo, who's going to be returning to the show in just about 25 minutes or so. But let me get my co-host in here first, Mr. Roberto Rojas. My man, how are you?
Very well, Joe. How are you? I mean, it's been a fascinating weekend. I mean, surely over the drama that we saw in Germany a couple of days ago, I mean, I hope that we get the same similar drama as we get in Italy, because it's just been a fascinating European season, not just in the league, but also in the Champions League, you know, Europa League, you know, not even in our first division we're getting as much drama. Even back in the second division, we're hearing a lot of drama happening in jolly old England as well.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. You know, this final run up this last week and a half, at least we've got plenty to talk about in all the different leagues coming up. But I think the Bundesliga, I think Serie A is going to really lend a lot to those spots. No one has a title race. I mean, obviously Bundesliga and the EPL had the title races where the other leagues were decided. But we've got a lot going on across the table in Italy where we didn't really have that in England. We didn't have it that much in Spain either, Rob, this season. So very, very excited that we get 2 weeks in a row of you know, top-end football, both at the top and bottom of the table in one of the big five leagues. Also, one of the facts that I believe you tweeted this week was that for the first time, we've had repeat champions in all five leagues. I think, weren't you the one that tweeted that this weekend?
Yeah, that was exactly. Yep, all five champions in order. Juventus in Italy, Barcelona in Spain, Manchester City in England, Bayern in the Bundesliga, and PSG in Liga.
Absolutely. You know, what a great, great season. Even though many would say that it's boring, it's the same old, but the path to get to that point was just, special, to say the least. So hopefully it continues on the weekend in the Serie A and in Ligue 1, where we do have a little bit of a relegation battle going down at the bottom of the table. So let's get into the trivia question, my friend. I believe it is your honor, and it's your turn to stump me.
So we're going to go to Spain. Okay. We're going straight to La Liga. We're going to talk about a goalkeeper that I like and I think is one of the best, maybe the best, in John Oblak. So John Oblak won his fourth consecutive Zamora Trophy, which is essentially the trophy that is given by Marca for the lowest goals to game ratio. He won it for the fourth straight time. That puts him joint second for most Zamora titles ever. But he's only second place to this goalkeeper who has five. Can you name that goalkeeper? And it is a name that you are familiar. It's a Spanish goalkeeper, and he's widely known all around the world.
So the thing is that the first option would be, you know, the great goalkeeper that retired on the weekend, where you'd like, okay, that's got to be him. But I don't know why, but I feel like he's not the answer. So I'm gonna write down a different name, we're going to go with that name, and then we'll see what happens. I probably should go with my gut and just go with the other one first, but you know what?
I could tell you it's one of the greatest Spanish goalkeepers of all time.
No, and then that means I'm probably going to get it wrong.
So. And he hasn't retired recently. I mean, it hasn't been so long since he's retired.
He is retired.
He's retired. But he's one of the greatest. I mean, you think of great teams, you know, and you put of the goal in Spain, mm-hmm. and you think of the goalkeeper of that great team. Right. He's the first one that comes to mind.
And I got a feeling that the guy that I want that I wrote down. This is the reason, you know, I might actually get this one right. Who knows?
Let's see.
All right. So let's get to it, man. Let's talk about this weekend in our opening thoughts topic, and that's the Bundesliga title. The Bundesliga was decided this weekend. We'll go back to the main table here. Obviously, Bayern Munich finishing on top. They were in the driver's seat leading into that final match and really dismantling Eintracht Frankfurt. It was amazing, Rob, to watch this on the weekend. You and I were messaging back and forth as we were watching this. And this match, you know, from the Eintracht standpoint, went from Eintracht Frankfurt was in the Champions League and 3 minutes later was out of Europe. And it literally went. It was that kind of swing between the Bayern Eintracht Frankfurt match, the Mönchengladbach Dortmund match. You had the Leverkusen Hertha Berlin match. They all factored into those Champions League and Europa League spots. And the goals were flying in minute by minute. And it was literally a 3 minute section of time where I believe it was Dortmund scored. It was Bayern took the lead back on Frankfurt. And I want to say it was Leverkusen jumped back ahead of Hertha Berlin. And in that 3 minute span of all those goals going in, you know, rapid fire, Eintracht went from being a Champions League participant to an outsider looking in. So. We talked about this with Alex Schaefer last week a little bit, where there was going to be plenty of drama. And if you think about it, Rob, haven't even talked about the title race, right? I mean, at one point, this Bayern match was 1-1. Dortmund was up 1-0. And we were in a situation where we needed a goal in either match to change the top of the table from Dortmund to Bayern Munich. And that was, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, that was in the second half of both matches.
That's right.
You know, so... just insanity. You've got 45 minutes to go in a season, and the title hinges on a goal one way or another. It's fantastic drama. You know, the only thing it reminds me of is when City scored when Aguero scored that stoppage time winner a few years back. That was the kind of feel that moment had. Like, were we going to get a 90th minute, you know, something or other from Luka Jovic in his last match at Eintracht Frankfurt? Or was this going to be like an Arjen Robben masterclass off the bench or something? What were we going to get? Because it was something that was going to be fun to watch. I want your two cents on it, Rob, because, I mean, it was just, like I said, from first place to almost 10th, it was drama all the way.
It was indeed drama. I mean, you look at how dramatic all the matches have come to, even to, and poor Augsburg, even to Wolfsburg, you know, who were thrashed Augsburg on the day that saw them into that Champions League spot. And also because of goal difference, you have to also realize they were having a bit of problems with goal difference. And the fact that, you know, even though they both made it to Europa League, they only standed by them and Gladbach only by one goal from fifth to sixth. And to think of the situation that they were both in prior to the day. But yeah, I think it's been fascinating. I think it was fun to see Eintracht Frankfurt give Bayern a fight when it lasted, but then Bayern just became Bayern and came Frank Ribery and Arjen Robben. Incredible to score their final goals at Bayern Munich. on their final match. I mean, that's sensational. The fact that these two are legendary and in the status that they are at Bayern Munich, I think to do that on a home crowd, like Alex said, it was the first time that they won it it was the first time that they actually won the Bundesliga in front of their home crowd since the Allianz Arena opened. So I think for that was very special to see. You know, you look at Dortmund, even though they did win another day, they couldn't do anything besides just look at the result happening in Bayern. But you have to give credit on the wonderful season that they had. You know, unfortunate to really run to a really good Bayern Munich side. And also, I think we also have to mention, Joe, I don't think you mentioned this, but Leipzig, who kind of were the team that kind of were in purgatory at this point. You know, they were just there. They were in third place. There was, I think it was like a 10-point gap between second and an 8-point gap between fourth. So it's not, so they're just there. But they ended up losing on the day. And a special shout-out, I think we have to give it a special shout-out to the ageless wonder that is 41-year-old Claudio Pizarro.
Yeah,
he scored his goal, and the best thing about that is that he renewed that on the day afterwards, or at least like I think a few hours after the game, he renewed his contract for one more year. So a 41-year-old Claudio Pizarro will play one more year at Werder Bremen.
Yeah, an 88th minute winner for them, if you think about it. You know, yep. And I'm just looking at the Werder Bremen RB Leipzig table here in terms of the match report. And Werder Bremen was leading the whole way. It was a Mukiele goal in the 86th minute that drew them level. And then Pizarro 2 minutes later, you know, I'd like to say that it was because of Aaron Johansson coming onto the pitch. Pizarro came on in this match in the 74th minute. And then obviously 14 minutes later scores that goal at the you know, wonderful, ripe young age of 41 years old. You know, let's go ahead now and look at the bottom of the table, Rob, because there wasn't much drama at the bottom of the table, which is unusual. I mean, we saw that in England. We're going to see it in where there was no drama. There was no drama at the bottom of the German table, believe it or not, which is amazing to me. There was no drama at the bottom of the La Liga table either. Those were all pretty much decided before we went in. Stuttgart was going to be going in to this playoff match against the. I'm sorry, actually, I'm looking up the information now because that match is coming up against Union Berlin, you know, from the second Bundesliga to see who goes to the Bundesliga and who stays in the second Bundesliga. So that is coming up. But those spots were already decided. So, you know, going back to the drama, it was all in the right spots for me where it was all in positioning and Champions League places. And, you know, and it was also championship spots as well that were kind of decided here. We always talk, Rob, about teams playing for third place or things playing for fourth place, you know, trying to be in the top four, trying to be in the Champions League. And sometimes for me, it sours me a little bit when we look at some of these races in some of these leagues, because it's like, who wants to be the third best team, right? I mean, it doesn't sound very ambitious, does it? You know, but here, when you talk about the money involved and the prestige of being able to go to these other tournaments and things like that, it's massive. And so for teams like Leverkusen, Mönchengladbach, Eintracht, who were in that driver's seat, I mean, they were really in that driver's seat, Rob. They lost their last three matches of the season. And I think the toll of the lengthy Europa League season had taken its toll on them. To the point where they just couldn't finish because they were playing with Bayern. It was a pretty good match, and then the wheels kind of fell off, and then the rest is history, and it causes them to go from being in the top and in the top of the league to being bounced out of European competition. My curiosity is, and I don't know, and I didn't dig enough into Eintracht's last three matches. How many goals did they give up late in those matches? Because that would interest me, Rob. Where, you know, you wonder, is it something where it was just too heavy and the roster was too thin? And I'm just going back to look at it now. The Leverkusen match, they absolutely destroyed them from top to bottom. That was a few weeks ago. That was that 6-1 match that really kind of set the tone with Leverkusen, you know, marching its way to the top of the table or the top of this section. But Mainz beat them with 2 second-half goals. Obviously, we look at this last particular match on the weekend against Bayern where they were 1-1 at the they were 1-0 at the half, Rob. They came on a Sebastian Allais goal in the 50th minute, leveled them, but then, like we said, they just fell apart late. So I'm wondering your thoughts on, and if you feel that maybe Eintracht Frankfurt kind of fell apart towards the end of the season, and maybe that Leverkusen thrashing was just too much to overcome emotionally.
Well, I think after everything that they've been going through over the season, I think, you know, making Frankfurt to make it to a Europa League semifinal, which was unprecedented, because many people did not expect that to be in that position. I think they were just perhaps a bit burned out, where they kind of had to realize that they were focusing on a major title race. Well, not title race, but like qualification to Europe, that other teams were going in for the kill and taking advantage. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, that I think that game against Leverkusen kind of killed it off there, especially mm-hmm. after coming out of a brutal loss in the Europa League. So it's tough to say, but you go into these situations where, you know, you need to get maximum points, you need to get results, you need to understand how to you know, manage your team in positions and similarities that situations that allow you to manage everything. So mm-hmm. I just see it as that. Good on Leverkusen to qualify, mm-hmm. But it's just a shame that after the season that Frankfurt had, that they're only going to miss out on a Champions League spot.
So, Rob, you know, just to wrap up our discussion on the Bundesliga weekend, you know, I want 2 seconds to talk about the Bayern Munich Dortmund comparison, at, you know, going toward the end of the season. But if you wouldn't mind calling up the table and the top scorers, because, you know, the Bundesliga is a league that you cover all season. So I'd like you to give the finals on both of those.
Yes.
So while you're looking that up, you know, looking back on Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, Dortmund led for quite a while in this season. They really started out on fire, kind of petered out, especially towards the end of the season here, but did close with three of their last five matches. You look back on their season, Rob, and you could even go back to, this is, 34, 33, 32, week 31. And you could even say the title changed hands in week 31. Because when you look back at the entire the table between the two of them, the only difference between the two teams overall is the fact that there was one match on the season that Munich won and Dortmund drew. Munich closed 24-6-4. Dortmund closes 23-7-4. And you look back, like I said, to that particular week, to week 31, where Dortmund lost 4-2 to Schalke at home, and Bayern Munich draw at Nuremberg 1-1. There was the opportunity where if they take that loss and they turn it into a win, or if Bayern drops those points, maybe we're having a different discussion about Bayern repeating as champions. But that's how close this season was, 34 matches, and we came into a second half where there was still opportunity for Bayern to win. I'm sorry, for Dortmund to win this championship, and I think this is an amazing season. So, yeah, if you want to wrap up your thoughts and then give us the final table and the top goal scorers.
Absolutely. So to finish it off, we have Bayern Munich, top of the table with 78 points, winning their, I think it's their seventh straight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe seven. That's correct.
Seven. That's right. Yeah. So they've won their seventh straight title. Dortmund will finish in second with 76 points. RB Leipzig with 66 points in third place. In fourth place, in the final position for Champions League, we have Bayer Leverkusen with 58 points. In the Europa League spots, we have Borussia Mönchengladbach in fifth with 55 points, tied with Wolfsburg, but only off a goal difference gave Mönchengladbach the advantage. They will finish in sixth place, and Eintracht Frankfurt will finish in seventh, heading off to the Europa League. Looking at the bottom of the table, we have Hannover 96 and Nuremberg being the two teams that have been relegated to the second Bundesliga, but Stuttgart are still in the relegation playoff. They will play Union Berlin this week in a two-legged race to decide who will stay up and who will go down to the Bundesliga or the second Bundesliga. Top goal scorers are Robert Lewandowski with 22 goals, Paco Caser, who had a tremendous season coming off from Barcelona and just rejuvenated himself, 18 goals. In third, we have a three-way tie from third to sixth, and some couple names here that have been impressive in this season. Willem Weghorst of Wolfsburg, Marco Reus of Borussia Dortmund, Andrej Kramaric of Hoffenheim, and two players who kind of been kind of the stars, or at least, like, you know, the breakout stars for in this Bundesliga season, Luka Jovic, as we mentioned, at Eintracht Frankfurt, and Kai Havertz of Bayer Leverkusen, all of the five with 17 goals.
Havertz, 19 years old. I don't think we've seen any rumors of where he might be going or if he's going to be leaving Leverkusen at the end of this season. Obviously, Luka Jovic has signed that contract with Real Madrid, according to all reports. Marco Reus, comeback player of the year, Rob?
Absolutely. I think he's come back from injury and to get back into the form that he's been. I think it's been tremendous. Yeah, and, I think he's been fantastic.
And looking at Eintracht Frankfurt, Sebastian Haller is still going to be at Frankfurt at least for one more season. So they're not losing. I mean, they're losing a massive piece in Luka Jovic, but they do have quality strikers still in the fold that can help them. So I don't think they're that far off. It's going to be interesting to see how they retool with the big money that they get from Real Madrid for Jovic, that they can turn it back into the club and maybe fortify this club to make a deeper run in the Europa League coming up next year. So
for sure.
Let's turn our focus real quick. Let's spend 2 minutes on La Liga. I know that a lot of things that were decided in La Liga, we were hoping for a Getafe, race to the Champions League, but unfortunately, Rob, it wasn't meant to be. Getafe losing on the weekend to Villarreal. I'm sorry, drawing to Villarreal 2-2. Combining that with a Valencia victory on the weekend, 2-0 over Valladolid, basically took that last place from the Getafe. So Valencia will be the fourth team going into the Champions League, where Getafe will be going to the Europa. Sevilla and Espanyol also joining them, Rob. What are your thoughts so far or at the end of the of the La Liga season, and let's look at the top goal scorers while you've got it up on the board.
I think it was just Barcelona just running wild. I mean, 90 goals, 87 points, the biggest gap ever towards their rivals Real Madrid, 19 points. I think that just says a lot of how bad Real Madrid have been this season, but they still made it to a Champions League spot. But important Getafe as well to lose it off on the final day to an impressive Valencia side, actually. They've been really good under Marcelino. They did make it to a they looked as a team that could really fight it off. They made it to the semifinals of the Europa League. They still could win a title, mind you, Joe. They could still win a title.
Mm-hmm.
Play Barcelona for the Copa del Rey this weekend, so they could still win something. But it's been a tremendous season for them. Espanyol back in Europe after a long, long time. Sevilla back in Europe. Looking at the bottom of the table, though, I mean, we have Vallecano, Huesca, the recently promoted Huesca, and Girona. If you remember, Joe, this Girona team, I think, finished like 10th last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're heading off to the second Bundesliga. But we have to give a special shout-out to Celta Vigo. I mean, Iago Aspas, who's come back from injury, who's really fought it off. And came back and really has helped this team moving forward to save him off relegation. I think it's a fantastic story. And we have to mention Santi Cazorla. We have to mention him. The fact that he came back through everything, from torn ACL injuries that essentially would have ended his career. And I think his ability to walk, Joe, if I'm not mistaken, but just the tremendous, wonderful comeback from 636 days of not playing. And to get them, also to get Villarreal, I think, not relegated as well. I think it's a fantastic story. That was just one of the fantastic stories to see in Spain.
35 appearances. I want to say he had 10 surgeries on his Achilles.
That's right.
Basically to save his foot, which is amazing. So, we talked about Marco Reus as the comeback player of the year in the Bundesliga. Definitely want to give that nod to Santi Cazorla and what he did at Villarreal this season. For Espanyol, we talk about getting into the Champions League, Europa League. Espanyol having to win on the last day, where they beat Sociedad 2-0, and Athletic Bilbao, if I remember correctly, just looking at my notes here, losing to Sevilla 2-0, that in essence knocked them out of the of European spots as well. So Espanyol doing work on the last day, winning their last three matches too. By the way, to close that out, did we give top scorers in Spain?
No, we're doing that right now. We have Lionel Messi again. 36 goals. He's going to win the Golden Boot in the European Golden Shoe for perhaps a sixth time, unless Kylian Mbappe scores four over the weekend. But in second place, we actually have a tie. We have Karim Benzema and Luis Suarez with 21 goals. So a 15-goal gap between Lionel Messi and two players.
Amazing.
No big deal. Iago Aspas, 20 goals. Will finish in fourth, and Christian Stuani, who unfortunately has been relegated, will finish the season with 19 goals to his name.
Wow. So great season in La Liga as well.
Definitely.
One other thing, I know we've got a couple of minutes here before Matt joins us. Let's start looking ahead, Rob. We'll table the Kylian Mbappe discussion for the moment, see if we get some time at the end of the show. But Ligue 1 is pretty much decided for the most part. They're going to play their final matches this coming Friday. So if you're looking to play hooky, Friday would be a good day to do it. PSG have already run away and hid with the title here on 91 points. Four losses, four draws, 29 wins. Lille, Rob, this is a team that almost finished relegated themselves last year. Here they are, second place in Ligue 1, 75 points, massive, massive turnaround there. They're going to the Champions League. Third place, Lyon, is going to have to play their way in. Fourth place, occupied by Saint-Étienne on 65 points. These are pretty much final positions for these teams. Montpellier in fifth place could also battle Marseille for the final spot just in position alone. No reward on the end of that rainbow. Montpellier on 59 and Marseille on 58 points. Your relegation battle is where we're at, and we've got a couple of relegation matches to talk about this weekend. But right now we've got three teams, believe it or not, that are fighting. Really two, but we're looking at possibly three. And the three teams are Caen, Amiens, and technically Monaco, Rob, which is still amazing to you. Leonardo Jardim, obviously fired, rehired after Thierry Henry came in and took over for a little while on the season. They've managed to get it turned around enough to the point where they're almost safe. What they're out on is really goal differential at this point. But Monaco in 16th, Amiens in 17th, Monaco on 36 points, Amiens on 35, and then Caen on 33 points, currently holding that last relegation spot. So we're, you know, interesting to see what's going to happen on this weekend. And we've got a couple of matches to pay attention to at the end of the show to watch that relegation battle. But all the other places have been decided. You know, Kylian Mbappe leads the league, 32 goals, 6 assists. Pepe at Lille has scored 22 goals in the season, 11 assists to go with it too, Rob, which is something that you should recognize. Cavani on 18 goals, Florian Thauvin on 15 with Neymar, Dembele, that's Moussa Dembele. Radamel Falcao will be heading over to do the Copa America with Colombia, as it looks like, as well, rounding out the top 7 on 15 goals as well. So, you know, a pretty interesting season. I know it kind of went to form. Lille, obviously the bright star in an interesting season overall for them. Marseille, for me, Rob, I think you've got to be excited about Marseille. Really have turned that corner, have started to come back up the table. You've seen the addition of Mario Balotelli. Will he stay at Marseille past this season? I don't know. But this is a team that we've always look back at and say this was a team that was kind of burned to ashes a few years back. You know, you remember André Pierre-Gignac, among others, and they kind of dismantled this side, flirted with relegation because of the dismantling. Now they're starting to come back from the ashes, and I think that's a great storyline that I think we should keep an eye on for next season, for the 19-20 season in Ligue 1, myself, Rob. What are your thoughts on what's happened? And really, for me, Rob, I want to ask you, is Neymar staying?
That's kind of the million-dollar question. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, we have to see what happens with Kylian Mbappe as well at this point, given the comments that we heard. But yeah, it's been an interesting season. It's been shocking to see what's happened to Monaco. The fact that they're still technically in a relegation race. It's been great to see actually Lille though to go back after so much controversy over the last few years. Mm-hmm. To see him into a European spot, I think is great. Lyon, Saint-Étienne. Saint-Étienne back as well. I think it's been an interesting race, but it's 104 goals by PSG, 91 points. There's no team stopping them, at least now.
Not at this point, but you know, it'll be interesting to see if there are teams that can possibly, you know, give us some type of race similar to what we had a few years ago, you know, especially with Monaco taking over and winning that one championship that one season. I think that would be great to see again. I think that would be really worth it for the league in general if we saw 100%. Something like that happen. So I'm gonna stop us here for a moment because I just got word that our guest is ready to come in. So I'm going to get him in here because you know, obviously he's one of our favorites to talk to, and you know, once you get him in here, I do have a great question to ask him, and then Rob, I'm gonna let you jump in. But certainly one of the great Serie A experts that we talk to, featured on Sirius XM, part of Gentleman Ultra, part of Football Italia, host of the State of Play podcast, and a guy you can hang out with at the Football Factory and have a beer with, Mr. Matt Santangelo. Man, what's going on?
Hey, guys, what's going on? Thanks for having me back on.
No, thanks for coming on. I got to ask you, tell me about the zebra cakes, man. I think you're a closet Juve fan.
Yeah, you know what it is, too. It was just stumped. I was looking for a snack, and lo and behold, I see, you know, the pictures on social media of Juve having like their 37 cakes with the 37 on them, which that's another story in itself that we could talk about at another recording. But and then I see the zebra cakes there. And my mother was sitting at a table. I'm like, who's the Juventino in the family, the closet Juventino no one's telling me about? And yeah, I thought it was just a pretty funny thing. But I'm sure that Juventus and the supporters and all the people involved with the club are having more than a little Debbie snack cakes to celebrate.
That's true. Yeah. Usually a little champagne to go with it, right?
Yeah, right.
Again. So, Rob, jump on in here because, I mean, I've got a bunch of questions for Matt, and I know we could talk for hours, but I want you to get in here and take whatever I'm not going to ask him because I got a million things to ask him.
Well, I'm just looking at some of the news that are going on right now. What I'm seeing or what I'm reporting, and I think you mentioned this in a tweet, Matt, is that the possibility of Mauricio Sarri leaving Chelsea and being replaced by Frank Lampard, which means that you have two favorites, I think, now for the Juve job, which is Simone Inzaghi and Mauricio Sarri. So, I mean, wow, where to begin with this, Matt? I mean, what do you think of this possibility of both either Sarri or Inzaghi, you know, going to Italy, going to Juve? Which one do you prefer, honestly?
Well, there's a lot to break down with this coaching carousel, right? And I was telling a buddy of mine just before I came on in the air with you guys, is that I think the first domino to fall, at least from a Serie A perspective, with all the coaching situations, the coaching changes that we could see this summer, again, Roma, Inter, Milan, and Juve could all be changing managers, right? Mm-hmm. I think for me that the first domino to fall is Juve announcing their manager. Now, of course, a lot of things are connected here because, as you just mentioned with the news that you're breaking with me right now, after 1 year where Sarri pretty much has to deal with not having a full window to put together his ideal Chelsea project in his first year abroad and outside the Italian peninsula, I think he did a pretty stand-up job, all things considered. You know, he had the great start with Chelsea. They stumbled midway through the season. He found a way to recover it and finish third. And you have two final finishes so far with obviously the Europa League still to play against Arsenal. So I think for me, like if I was looking at it from a Chelsea perspective, I would have stuck with Sarri. His projects take multiple windows to put together. His great Napoli side and Sarri ball didn't come overnight. That took multiple windows, him getting his guys to fit his system, his scheme, his philosophy. And I just think that, again, it's one of those, it just comes down to Roman Abramovich having that same philosophy or same mentality, shall I say, with managers that maybe Maurizio Zamparini had with Palermo, right? It's almost one of those things where, I guess on a different scale, of course, because Chelsea win trophies and they're always one of the bigger clubs to be talked about. But to change managers year to year, I just don't see this working for Chelsea. I think, you know, with the league being so competitive nowadays, and some people are even saying that the Premier League and English football is really at the top of its game right now, ahead of La Liga, ahead of Serie A, ahead of Bundesliga, ahead of Ligue 1. I just wonder and question if this move is a little bit more of a move, of course, if they do bring in Lampard to replace Sarri, is a bit of a way to win back some of the fans. And I don't know. I think there's a lot behind the scenes that maybe the Chelsea brass is not happy with Sarri, but they knew what they were getting. There was no mystery behind who he was as a manager, his previous coaching jobs, some of the controversies around his limited approach towards tinkering and using different players that we obviously saw throughout most of the season before he finally ushered in a lot of those youth players like Calum Hudson-Odoi and Ruben Loftus-Cheek. So I think this is a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction for Chelsea to let go of Sarri after one season. But getting back to how that's connected with Serie A, I think, you know, if no one's been listening or hasn't gotten a chance to look or check out the interview that Marco Messina from Italian Football TV did with Luca Mondlane, the guy who broke the Ronaldo news, and of course, the most recently, the Allegri news. There was a lot of things connected with that too, and there's a lot of managers being linked to Juve. So I think these two clubs are linked in Chelsea and Juventus, in a sense that the Juve, once they selected a manager, there's Pochettino being linked, there's Sarri being linked, as you just mentioned, Simone Inzaghi, who Mondlane said is no chance going to get the Juventus job. So there's a lot of things to look at for, and it just goes to show you that at this point in time, of the year, you really got to consider the source of where you're getting your information from, because one source is going to tell you this and one source is going to tell you a completely opposite thing. So I just think the coaching situations around some of the top clubs in Italy, and obviously what we're seeing with Chelsea, is going to be very fascinating to watch over the next couple of weeks. I think that's where we'll start to see things get ironed out.
You know, Matt, I just want to jump in here quick because I do want to ask you about Momblano in that interview. He listed kind of the odds or the likelihood of who the next manager would be at Juve. He's actually got two managers that are co-favorites, and it's not Maurizio Sarri. It's Pep Guardiola and Antonio Conte. And at the moment, Conte's actually, by many reports, is already going to be going to Inter. So the odds on favor right now, according to Momblano, is actually Pep Guardiola, which is massively crazy to me, because they would have to throw, I mean, I don't know that there's that much money in the world that they could throw at Manchester City right now and to the Etihad group to lure him away. So Sarri, he listed as likely 2 out of 5. Even Mourinho had better odds at coaching Juve than Sarri at this point. So I'd like you to kind of factor in, because the list is long for the Juve job right now, with Guardiola, Antonio Conte, Jose Mourinho, Maurizio Sarri, Simone Inzaghi.
Pochettino is another one.
Pochettino's right. Another one. I've even heard Gasperini.
And Mihalovic, too, right?
And Mihalovic, yeah. I mean, I've heard all those kinds of names. There's so many names lining up to coach Juve at this point. Who in your heart do you feel is favored? Because I'm going to come back and ask you about the Milan job a little later on.
For me, at this point in time, I think Sarri could be an option for Milan. And the reason why I say I think he could be an option for Milan is that I think Milan at this point in time, again, a lot's going to hinge on whether Milan, Inter, Atalanta, Roma, whoever finishes in those two spots for the Champions League. Obviously, that plays a large role in this. But overall, I think Conte is going to join Inter. I do think that Inter are going to get the job done, whether they finish third or fourth. I do think they'll finish in the top four, which, again, is a huge selling point to a guy like Conte, who, if you guys watch that video, it looks like that they have a kind of a pre-agreement worked out between Marotta and Conte to make that Inter connection happen. For me, I don't see, if we're getting back to the main guys here and who we think that will get the Juve job, I don't see Guardiola leaving City this summer. And the reason why I say I don't think he'll leave this summer is because I just don't think that he's quite finished of what he's trying to accomplish at City. I think he's one of those guys that is he doesn't want to leave a project unless he really feels that he's got nothing else left to give to it. And I think that's what we saw in many ways with the Bayern job. He won the league a couple times. He won cups, but he couldn't win the Champions League. And I think he kind of understood that he really wasn't going to be able to take that Bayern club any further than he did. So that's when he took that year off, if you guys recall. I think he came to the States. He was living in New York. He was starting to learn English because obviously he was going to take that City job, which he evidently did. So I think that Guardiola is a long shot, despite what Momblano says. I'm not going to discredit him because he was right on the Ronaldo news, and many didn't think that was a possibility, right? So if I had to kind of give my guess based off what Momblano said, based off of what I know, and based off just kind of my gut feeling about Juve and some of the managers they've been linked to, I could see it being between Pochettino and Conte. And the reason why I say it's those two, because Pochettino has hinted at, even before they got to the final that they're going to play in a couple weeks' time with Liverpool, he even said, and he didn't try to, you know, the media didn't spin the words, or he kind of clarified it even when the media asked him as a follow-up. He pretty much said, like, wait, so you would leave Tottenham after this season if you feel like that's the right time. And he pretty much said yes. So I think for me, if Tottenham do find a way to win the Champions League final, I could totally see him heading off into the sunset. Look, I got this team a Champions League trophy, beating Liverpool. Now I think is my time, because I don't think I can do any better than this. Then I can see him going to Juve and getting a little bit more to work with. Because if you recall, he hasn't been given that big transfer policy, that big transfer budget that the likes of Pep Guardiola, that Jurgen Klopp have been given. He's really had to make the most out of very little spending on the market, and yet he's finds himself in a Champions League final, and he finds himself finishing top four in the Premier League. So I think you have to look at those two managers. Again, there's a lot of things that are developing with this right now. And as I mentioned previously, once we started this, is that there's a lot of dominoes to fall. Obviously, if Inter don't make Champions League, then maybe Conte becomes an option, right? Because Conte's going to have the year off, and do you really think he's going to want to coach a team in the Europa League? If he has the option to go to Juve, and Juve are finally going to give him the transfer targets that he wanted before he actually left the first time, then that's a possibility. But there's so many things connected, and I think we'll start to kind of see how things take shape with this over the next couple of weeks.
Matt, I think we're going to jump in. You kind of mentioned here, going to my next topic, we're going to talk about the Milan club. We have Inter and Milan technically fighting for that final Champions League spot. Even Atalanta fighting it off as well, and they've had a sensational season. But we're going to talk about the two teams happening over there in Milan. I mean, there's so much controversy happening in Inter. You know, look at Spalletti's future, and you aforementioned the fact that you could see Antonio Conte coming in. You know, you have the controversy with Mauro Icardi being stripped of the captaincy and mm-hmm. being even as more controversial of him perhaps lurking a move outside of the San Siro. And you also have Milan as well. I mean, a team that, you know, has just, you know, been kind of a roller coaster ride, as you could say. But of course, I mean, we have to mention Piatek. I mean, he's the one that we need to talk about. I mean, he's had a sensational season, not just at Milan, but I think at Genoa as well. 36 games, 22 goals. I mean, he's been phenomenal. I mean, firstly, how do you see this race panning out in the end between both the Milan clubs? Who do you see qualifying for Europe? And also, is Piatek the breakout star of the Serie A this season?
Well, first off, with the race for the final two spots, third and fourth in the Serie A table, there's a lot to unpack. There's a lot of scenarios for each club. Obviously, with four clubs available or in the contention for the two spots, there are many scenarios, some more difficult than others. Obviously, if Inter, I think if they just get a victory, if they pretty much control their own destiny, they'll get one of the spots. Same thing about Atalanta. They got the draw that they needed against Juve on the weekend. So getting a victory this upcoming weekend, against Sassuolo, they would secure a berth as well. Those two teams would go in. Milan and Roma would be on the outside looking in. I think Roma just need too much to go down, and with the way the season went for them, with, of course, the monkey blow up, DeFrancesco, that whole thing just not working out, and then having an early exit in the Champions League, obviously struggling for pretty much most of the entire season until Ranieri has kind of come and steadied the ship a little bit, you know, yanking Olsen, giving Marante in there, which is a switch that most people thought should have came in earlier, because he's been just woeful this year in replacing Alisson, who's been sensational for Liverpool. For me, I'm looking at it right now, and as a Milan fan, I would love to see my team creep in and find a way, whether it be third, whether it be fourth. But for me, I just think when you have a club like Milan, who they had every opportunity to control their own destiny down the stretch. They had that draw with Parma. They had the draw with Udinese. That those are teams that they should beat. And if you're really serious about finishing in top four, you got to take care of the business. It's not so much against the teams like with Juve, Napoli. It's when you drop points to a team like Frosinone or Torino, which, again, they lost 2-0 a couple weeks back. That's where you really start to see the writing on the walls. And I feel that they're kind of – the tide switched for Milan, and it really made it more difficult after that derby loss to Inter, because they lost to Samp on the road. They started free-falling. They started dropping points. They just weren't the same team. It looks like they kind of lost a step. The energy just wasn't there. And Atalanta, were credit to them. You know, they've been riding the wave the entire season. Everyone was saying, yeah, maybe they'll kind of fall out of it now. You know, can they really keep this up for 38 rounds? And they have. They've gotten results against big teams. They've taken care of business when they needed to. They made it to a Coppa Italia final. Gasperini has motivated the side to the point where you have players like Duvan Zapata, Iliacic, having fantastic and career years. And I just feel that Milan and Roma are going to be on the outside of the game, because I just do feel that Atalanta will handle what they got to handle against Sassuolo. And I do think Inter will be able to take care of business against Empoli. And unfortunately for Milan, they'll have to be settling with Europa League football.
It kind of answers my question for you. You know, looking forward to the weekend, Atalanta at home to Sassuolo. Atalanta, the highest scoring team in the Serie A right now, two goals better than Napoli, four goals better than Juve. Do you see them taking care of business against Sassuolo in general?
Atalanta, you're talking about Atalanta against Sassuolo,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
I do. I just feel that, you know, Sassuolo are a team that they're not fighting against relegation. They're not fighting for anything. They're one of those clubs that they're okay with being in the middle of the pack. Again, living to fight another day in Serie A. I do like De Gerbi as a manager. I think he's done a pretty decent job with that club, all things considered. But I do think it's one of those years for Atalanta, right? You know, we've been talking about them as Serie A darlings the entire season. Gasperini's the manager of the year, in my opinion, without question. As you mentioned, competing tooth and nail with teams like Napoli and Juve, notorious goal-scoring clubs, and possibly leading the league in scoring, which speaks volumes as to what he's been able to do with that Atalanta team, despite losing key pieces over the years with Kessié, Conti, Caldara. I mean, the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. So I will say this. I do think Atalanta and Inter will handle business. Mm-hmm. I think the Inter-Empoli game is a very fascinating one to watch because mm-hmm. there is a lot of pressure for Inter, right? They didn't secure anything yet, number one. Number two, they are still in that situation where if they don't get top four, maybe they don't get Conte. Maybe they have to stick with Spalletti or sack Spalletti to get someone else new in there. And Empoli are fighting for their lives for salvation to stay around in Serie A another year. And I wrote an article a couple weeks ago on Caputo and what he's been able to do in his return to Serie A football this year after helping them Empoli win the league last year in Serie B. So that's just a kind of a fascinating storyline heading into the final match days. Yes, what's going on with the race for third and fourth, but also that battle at the bottom, because last time I checked, I think Genoa, Udinese, Empoli, and even Fiorentina are all battling to pretty much avoid relegation. So it's going to be a sensational weekend full of drama.
And I'm glad you brought up the bottom of the table, because like you said, you know, Empoli on the weekend looked fantastic in their 4-1 victory over Torino, a match that Torino really needed to stay in those European spots, in the race for those European spots, and they kind of really flopped it away. Not so much flopped it away as much as Empoli really took the match to them. So there was Empoli is a team that is playing really, really well. They've won their last three matches. I'm glad you brought up the Fiorentina part, because all of those teams, we talk about Genoa at 37 points, Empoli at 38, Udinese at 40, and Fiorentina at 40. Genoa play Fiorentina on the weekend in Florence. So this is something where you could potentially see Fiorentina lose to Genoa. They would become even on points. Udinese somehow manages a draw, something like that. Empoli beats Inter, which is certainly not out of the realm of possibility given the way they played last weekend and given the way Inter played against Napoli last weekend, where they were absolutely awful. And you could see Inter fall out of those Champions League spots. You could see Empoli stay alive, and you could see Fiorentina get relegated. I mean, the likelihood of that happening, of all of that happening, is pretty slim to none. I mean, but this is the kind of thing that we're going to have to keep an eye on this weekend, where we're going to have to watch multiple matches, because we're going to have to eye the top and the bottom of the table. So I think
100%. And, you know, just getting back to, you know, Fiorentina for a brief moment, because mm-hmm. it's one of those things, too, where though, you know, at the beginning of the calendar year, they were one of those clubs that were maybe a really legit contender, in my opinion, to finish at least at the minimum in the Europa League zone. Right. And yeah. they even had points at the time where they looked pretty solid. I just think it's really sad to see a team like Fiorentina, who obviously had to endure what they had to endure last season with, of course, the unfortunate passing of Davide Astori. And that seemed to be one of the things that rallied that club last year. And Stefano Pioli did a great job in keeping his guys on track, fighting for the city of Florence, you know, for the Fiorentina fans everywhere, and really fighting for their captain. And to see it kind of get to this point is really unfortunate. I'd love to see them stay up, because I do think they have some great pieces. Of course, Federico Chiesa, Jordan Veretout, two that come to mind. Albin Lafont's a great young goalkeeper, one of the best goalkeepers, in my opinion, this season. Milinkovic, a good young central defender from Serbia, who's been linked with many top clubs around the Premier League. So they do have a lot of pieces. They have a pretty decent project. I just think it's been one of those unfortunate cases where, you know, when we change managers, Pioli couldn't make it happen. Then you bring Montella in. It feels like they haven't won a game since January, and that could be the case. So it's going to be really fascinating to see how things pan out in the final week. And it's funny, I'm actually going to Brooklyn with my brother to watch some of the games on Sunday. Mm. I think the Milan game specifically against Spal with the IFTV guys, Michael and Marco. So that should be very, very fascinating. It'll either be a very joyous time for me if Milan can win and the stars align and they get top four, or it can be a very disappointing trek back from Brooklyn to New Jersey.
So I want to close out with another managerial question, because obviously we're going to go into the offseason and the coaching questions are going to linger around the Serie A for a while, amazingly at the top of the table, which is interesting. Juve, we pretty much have settled on a couple of different options. We've settled on Pochettino. We've settled on the outlandish idea of Guardiola. We've settled on Conte 2.0. And the Napoli job is stable. Ancelotti, I don't think there's anything that's going to take him away at the moment. So I'm going to run down the top six, because obviously that's where we're talking about coaching changes for the most part. So in number three, Atalanta, does Gasperini stick around or does he leave?
I think he stays. I feel that he's one of those managers where, I'm not going to discredit him or disrespect him in any way, but he wasn't too strong with Inter once they fired Leonardo in 2011. I just think he has learned and he has been able to grow as a manager since then. But it's one of those cases where, again, it's a different situation when you're coaching at a team like Inter, where, you know, you don't have your guys, the pressure is a little bit less on your back to succeed. I think it's a guarantee that he stays if they finish top four. I think that's for certain, in my opinion, yeah. Because I don't think he'd jump ship after this magical run that they had. Even if they finish outside fourth, which again, I don't see happening, mm-hmm. I still think that Gasperini will stay. I don't know if Milan do sort of like him, in the sense that I talked about in one of my videos a couple days ago, is that they like his ability to mold young talent. And obviously Milan have quite a bit of that. And I think that's kind of the direction they want to go with the project. But I do feel like Gasperini is going to stay at Atalanta. I just don't see a big club like Juve going after him, or maybe Roma. They've been linked to them too. So I'm never say never, of course. But I do feel that Atalanta are going to get the job done. And in with that, they're going to be able to keep Gasperini. Now, if they're going to be able to keep some of the big key guys that they have and spend on the market, which is really what you want from a team playing in the Champions League, right?
Right.
That's a completely different situation and a conversation for another podcast. But yeah, the Atalanta situation, I feel that it's pretty solidified with Gasperini, in my opinion.
Inter, dead man walking in Spalletti?
Yeah, I don't see Spalletti coaching this club beyond this season, to be honest with you. I think he's done a pretty decent job, like I said, back if everything that I'm saying goes according to plan, back-to-back top four finishes, which is really what you want from Inter, right? Mm-hmm. But if they're able to secure Champions League, I think they're at that position where they start to see maybe Juve are a team that is a little bit more beatable. They have some pieces that are leaving. Obviously, Barzagli, Chiellini, those guys are getting up there in age. Barzagli obviously retiring. Mm-hmm. Buffon left. They got some pieces that they could possibly be selling. They got to spend. So they have their own situation. I think that if Inter are able to secure fourth, that's going to it's going to go a tremendously long way for them in being able to kind of push on to be in that category of contenders for the league title with Napoli and Juve, who, although again, probably are their favorites right now if you ask me for next year. But mm-hmm. I do think Luciano Spalletti is going to be replaced. It's just going to be a matter of who, really. And I think it's probably going to be Conte.
And I'm going to skip over Milan for a minute. I want to go to Roma. Does Ranieri have a chance of keeping that job?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think Ranieri came in there midway through the season with the intention of kind of hoping that he could steady the ship, get the team to a top four finish. And on the final match day, he's still there. But I just think they fell too deep into a hole. And mm-hmm. it was one of those things where you're hiring a manager midseason. Although despite Ranieri having familiarity with Rome, it's a different ownership group. It's a lot of chaos going on with Roma at this point in time. Of course, the way they handled De Rossi's, obviously his departure from the club after so many seasons. I just think that Ranieri is gonna kind of head off, and he's going to go maybe either take a year off or maybe get another project around Serie A, which I think he is certainly worthy of. I think, Ranieri, obviously we know what he did with Leicester. He had some decent spell, I guess, at Nantes and Ligue 1. Obviously it didn't go that well for him because he didn't stay there, but I could see him finding another job in Serie A because there's always managers changing.
And last one for you, your personal choice. Who's your top choice to replace Gattuso at Milan?
I'd love Sarri, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I just want to see a Milan team that can play progressive, attacking-minded football that's not concerned with, oh, we're up a goal, let's sit back, let's try to see this one out. I think when Sarri ball is going correct and it's going right, it's so aesthetically pleasing. It can be very effective. I mean, the one thing, obviously, that I dislike about it is the fact that he doesn't rotate as much as I'd like to see. And when you're playing in multiple competitions, like Milan could be, again, if they do qualify for a Champions League, but even then they're going to at least be in the Europa League, right? So they're going to have three competitions to worry about. You've got to be able to rotate. You've got to be able to usher in certain players. And at the end of the season for Chelsea, like I said previously, that he was able to do that with Hudson-Odoi, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and a couple others. But it's one of those things where if it's going to be, it's going to send a message to everyone around Italy that if they do appoint Sarri, I think they're really going to stick with him for multiple seasons, because I think he's a manager that really does require multiple windows to build his ideal project. Dynamic wingers, the proper midfield players, individuals in the back line to be able to play with the ball at their feet, build out the back, and move the ball quickly and around a possession-based game. So I would love Sarri myself, but you know, it's going to be difficult to see. Now, of course, with the news breaking about, you know, Sarri being going to probably let go, and they're going to be, obviously, Chelsea are going to replace him with Frank Lampard, I do suspect that he will go to Italy. It's just going to be a matter of which club.
Right. No, I agree. Matt, thanks for joining us, man. You know, I know you're wicked busy, and we're going to all enjoy the final week of the Serie A. And we got to make sure, I know Rob and I never got a chance to get back down to New York City to watch a match again, but we definitely got to plan that sooner than later coming up next season, man. Again, thanks for joining us, and all the best.
Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy the rest of your night.
All right, talk to you soon.
Bye.
And that was Matt Santangelo joining us. Great insight into the Serie A on the final weekend of the season. Rob, I know we're running out of time, and I want to talk about Copa Libertadores real quick. Because obviously we had the draw for the round of 16, which happened after our show last Monday. Some pretty tasty matchups in here, Rob. And I know you've got them queued up, especially three Paraguayan sides. And the news, Cerro Porteño coming out, what, today, I believe. So,
yeah, that's right.
So break the news for us, you know, the round of 16 and what happened with Cerro today.
All right, so I'll start with Cerro. They just got rid of their coach, Fernando Hubero. The season in Paraguay actually just finished a couple of days ago. Olimpia won their third straight league title. This time they won it unbeaten, actually. But in the end, it's not convincing enough for them to keep their coach after finishing second 2 years in a row. So it's going to be another carousel to see who's going to replace him. But looking at all the round of 16 matches, we have River Plate taking on Cruzeiro and San Lorenzo taking on Cerro Porteño. That's the first series of games that could see these winners of both the games face each other in the quarterfinals. We have Liga de Quito against Olimpia and Atlético Paranaense against Boca Juniors. In the other game, we have Godoy Cruz against Palmeiras and Gremio against Libertad. We have MLS against Flamengo and Nacional against Internacional. So one side is very, very difficult, but the other one is slightly more favored, I think, to more of the Brazilian teams. But the first one, you could potentially see one or two things. You could potentially see either a River Plate Boca Juniors semifinal or a Cerro Porteño Olimpia semifinal. Both teams are the biggest derbies in their respective countries. So, man,
massive.
It's going to be fascinating. Yeah.
Massive matchups they're going all the way through. And Palmeiras has been playing well, too. They're going to end up, you know, could you see them, obviously, you know, facing at least one of the Brazilian teams? I think you could end up with an all-Brazil quarterfinal on the other side of the bracket, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you have to really favorite the Brazilian teams here. You know, Flamengo, Inter, Grêmio, and Palmeiras. And with that, you're already assured a Brazilian team in the final. So it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting. But as I've said and multiple times, Joe, we have talked about this. Anything can happen in this competition. And I mean, if anything can happen in the Champions League, we clearly saw that this season, then anything can happen in this tournament.
It's absolutely crazy. So that kicks off July 23rd. And, you know, that's a good time for us, Rob, because what we're going to end up doing is once we finish our international competitions, we'll be able to start to jump back into the swing of things with the Copa Libertadores as they kick off their quarterfinals. So that'll be great for us to watch. Let's get back to the trivia, Rob, because we're just running out of time. Go ahead and give us the trivia, and I will give you what my answer is.
Right. So going back to the trivia, we had John Oblak of Atlético Madrid winning his fourth straight Zamora Trophy, which is given to the best goalkeeper in La Liga with the lowest ratio to goals. He was second of all time, only second to this goalkeeper who has five. Can you name him?
Now, the first name that comes to mind, of course, is Iker Casillas, right? I mean, the great Spanish goalkeeper, one of the greatest of all time. And that's not my answer, though, because it almost felt like it was too easy to say Casillas. I'm actually going to go with Victor Valdez.
You got it. Victor Valdez has the most Zamora trophies. He has 5. Iker Casillas, ironically enough, has never won this title.
Wow. You know,
he has never won.
It felt like one of those trick questions. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, oh.
Actually, no, he won it once. Sorry. But yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
But it felt like one of those trick questions. Like, yeah, you know, the answer's got to be Casillas, right? I mean, the greatest Spanish goalkeeper of all time by most considerations. We talk about the goalkeepers of his generation. We talk about Neuer. We talk about Buffon. We talk about him always. It's always those three. It's got to be him, right? I mean, and then for some reason, I just felt like, no, it's not. For some stupid reason, it felt like a trick question. And then it was going to be Valdez, and I can't think of the other goalkeeper, the other Spanish goalkeeper that I want to say was at Barcelona.
Pepe Reina, but no.
No, not Reina. I can't think of his name now. He's balding.
Zubizarreta?
No. I'm going to look it up, and I'll figure it out after. I know exactly. It's Diego...
Lopez?
Diego Lopez, thank you.
No, I don't think he was ever considered into that.
No,
but
it felt like it was going to be one of those types of trick questions. And that's
Victor
why I wrote
Valdez. You know, ironically, Joe, you always think about, you mentioned Casillas. You have to mention, you have to remember, Joe, this guy's won everything too.
I know.
World Cup, Euros, Champions League,
everything.
He but he's always second choice in Spain. Always.
Yep, but he was on that team that won the 2010 World Cup, so... That's all that matters. So, Rob, before we hit the closing music, we got a bunch of matches for this week in Italy and in France to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So, just looking at the games that we have this weekend in the and all over the world, we have Liga. We have all matches on Friday at 3 p.m. We have Amiens taking on Gungap, Caen against Bordeaux, and Monaco have a 7-goal difference over Caen for that relegation spot. In MLS, we have LAFC, who've done pretty well so far recently, against the Montreal Impact Friday at 10:30. And in Serie A, the big one, all matches on Sunday, 9 a.m., so get to church early. Fiorentina against Genoa in a relegation race. We have Inter against Empoli, which could see a potential position of Inter either going to the Champions League and relegation for Empoli. We have Torino against Lazio, the possibility for both teams to get into Europa. We have Roma against Parma, which could indeed secure either UCL or Europa for Roma. And we have Spal against Milan, which you see Milan fighting for that Champions League spot. And we have Atalanta against Sassuolo, where Atalanta is fighting for that Champions League spot. So, like you said in the beginning of the show, Joe, we have relegation battles. We have Champions League battles. We have Europa League battles. We have everything that's going on. And I can't wait to see you.
Should make a great week, final week of the European season. So without any further ado, let's hit the closing music then.
Let's do it.
All right, coming up right at you here. And it's quite loud, so let me turn that down for the listeners. So for episode 243 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Mr. Matt Santangelo for joining us on the show. Next week is a holiday here in the United States that kicks off summer. It's Memorial Day. So we will be doing the show, but we're not sure when. We'll probably upload it just as a pod instead of a live show. And we will let you know all the details through our Twitter and our Facebook pages. So for episode 243 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.